end of chapter 11. Calculation of time from the atom, text 4. Translation. Atomic time is measured according to its covering a particular atomic space. That time which covers the unmanifest aggregate of atoms is called the great time. Purport. Time and space are two correlative terms. Time is measured in terms of its covering a certain space of atoms. Standard time is calculated in terms of the movement of the sun. The time covered by the sun in passing over an atom is calculated as atomic time. The greatest time of all covers the entire existence of the non-dual manifestation. All the planets rotate and cover space, and space is calculated in terms of atoms. Each planet has its particular orbit for rotating, in which it moves without deviation. And similarly, the sun has its orbit. The complete calculation of the time of creation, maintenance, and dissolution, measured in terms of the circulation of the total planetary systems until the end of creation, is known as the supreme Kala. Om Jnanatimanandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. You may wonder why this chapter and its content, calculation of the time from the atom, a verse about measuring atomic time, what does this have to do with your spiritual advancement? You may say, we've heard so many times Sanatana Goswami's statement that every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is flooded with Krishna prema. Hearing this verse, how can that be so? In other words, the first step for our spiritual advancement is to understand that there are things beyond the range of our senses. Krishna is atokshaja, beyond the range of the mind and senses. And even Krishna's material energy, how it works, is also beyond the range of the senses. Having that kind of humility is essential for obtaining higher knowledge. You may recall from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita how in the verses and purports it's explained that you cannot understand even your spiritual nature as spirit soul, not the body and mind. You can't understand that with your ordinary methods of acquiring knowledge. Even the basic spiritual facts cannot be verified directly by ordinary material perception and knowledge. You cannot perceive the spirit soul. You cannot prove the spirit soul exists by material methods. So if that is the reality about such an elementary spiritual truth, then what to speak about things that are even far beyond us, far beyond our understanding our own identity. A devotee is humble in acceptance that most of the things we need to know are beyond our range of sense perception. Does that doom us to being in ignorance or being helpless? Or you have to accept the fact we'll never understand? No. A devotee is one who understands that we need a different source for acquiring knowledge, a different method, and a different source. unless we hear from the supreme source of all energies, how can we actually understand the energies? Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says so many times, listen, Arjuna, I'm going to explain to you how this works, how that works, about this energy, about that energy. So many times Krishna explains, like Nameva Dusodagana, Prabhavamna Maharshi. The demigods don't understand me. The great rishis don't understand me. Because in every instance, I preceded them. Their recent manifestations, they can't understand the source on their own. Remember one very pivotal statement that Srila Prabhupada makes in one purport in Bhagavad Gita. Because we are tiny, because we are finite, we cannot approach the infinite. We don't have that constitutional capacity. We're tiny, we're limited, finite. How can we rise up, so to speak, and grasp the infinite? It doesn't work. Humility means to accept that point. But things can work the opposite way. Because the infinite, the unlimited, has unlimited possibilities. That means the unlimited can make himself known even to the limited. You can't say, oh, because we're limited, we'll never be able to get any higher knowledge. You can't be a cynic like that. Yes, we are limited, but there is the unlimited. And because the unlimited has infinite options, he can make himself known even to the tiny. So that's how the process of bhakti works in terms of our understanding. This chapter requires some humility in that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed, before you are liberated, read Srimad Bhagavatam. And after you are liberated, go on reading Srimad Bhagavatam. This canto and chapter, particularly this chapter, it's here. What is the purpose of this chapter being here? Maybe we'll not understand right away. We're not able to tell when Shukadeva Goswami is in ecstasy and supposedly when he's not. We can't tell. Even in his discussions in the fifth canto about the material universe, much of it far beyond what our senses can verify, even in discussing that, he can become lost in ecstasy. It's not that simply when Shukadeva Goswami is talking about Gopi Leela, he becomes overwhelmed by ecstasy. Remember a crucial statement about chanting Hare Krishna. By chanting Hare Krishna, you'll be able to see everything as diverse extensions of Krishna's energy. Your world changes because your vision changes. You'll be able to see everything as paraphernalia waiting to be engaged in Krishna's service. Then we can actually be able to function in this world in a meaningful, progressive way. When through our chanting, we no longer see the energy as separate from the energetic source. The more we see the world in that way, the more we become enlivened because we see potentialities all around for Krishna's pleasure. In this way, our devotional life becomes increasingly joyful. Any difficulties, anything that seems to be lacking, we know is due to our faulty perception, or that our perception hasn't advanced enough yet for seeing how to deal with this situation for Krishna's pleasure. And when will we ever think that we have completely mastered seeing everything in relation to Krishna and seeing the best way to engage everything in Krishna's service? We're dealing with the unlimited. Krishna's unlimited. His energies are unlimited. Love of Krishna is unlimited. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kavya Goswami compares love of Krishna to a pool that both Krishna and the devotee dive into together. Is there any bottom to that pool? No. Our fear is that by giving up the very shallow pool of material happiness, we'll be then faced with the uncertainty of the pool of bhakti. The pool of material happiness, we think, yeah, it may have its limitations, but at least we know it's there. Right? But the pool of bhakti, the pool of Krishna praying, sounds good, and yes, for those few who can attain it, it's wonderful, but meanwhile, we don't know whether we'll ever taste a drop. Although, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, just one drop of love of Krishna can drown the whole universe. Just one drop. So are these just poetic statements meant to fire us up, you know? Or is there reality, authenticity to such statements? We're afraid of limitation. Although material existence, we know indeed, has limitations, dissatisfactions, insufficiencies, at least it's something we know, right? But to gamble everything on Krishna and the pool of bhakti, that pool in which both Krishna and the devotee dive into, to just invest mightily in that, can mean insecurity as we see it. We don't know for sure what we'll get. Material life, we think we know what we're going to get, right? You work hard, you get money. Right? You work hard, you get a promotion, right? It's automatic, right? We are so proud, we think that we know the processes of material existence. You do like this, you get that. You do something else, you get that. What's the difficulty? We think we're quite masterful of our material affairs. We think we can predict. You know, there's mortgage rates, there's interest rates, it's all just giving some sense of certainty. Whereas spiritual life, pleasing Krishna, you just don't know, right? And then you'll say, does that pool of bhakti ecstasy, does it pay the bills? Does it pay the mortgage? Right? Does it provide job advancement and job security? Gradually, as our senses become purified by the bhakti process, we'll lose our paranoia about Krishna and Krishna's service. That's what it all is. Paranoia. Fear of the unknown. And that fear of the unknown is based on pride. I know the material world. I know material affairs. Believe me. Just Krishna, devotional service. You just don't know. It's just not under your control. That's the problem. You can't lock Krishna into a written contract. Like so many of our IT people. They're on contract, right? So everything is spelled out. You can't do that with Krishna. Why? Because Krishna's all about pure love. That's great, but... You want some itemized security. All the fine print should be there. Whereas Krishna makes these emphatic statements, or has even has Arjuna make these emphatic statements. Kaunteya Pratijanihi Name Bhukta Pranashyati. Arjuna declare it boldly. If I say it, they may not believe it, but you say it. They'll believe you. My devotee is never vanquished. How do we understand that a devotee is never vanquished? We can see sometimes devotees go through job crises, health crises, family challenges, health challenges. How is it that a devotee is never vanquished? Material existence means that everything material must be vanquished. That's what time is all about. Everyone knows how Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Kalosmi, time I am. I come to be the terminator. Can we see how time is affecting our life? Acknowledgement of time is relative to your consciousness. Remember how time passes when you're doing something you like, when you're really absorbed in something? Time seems to move so quickly, right? And when you're doing something you don't like that's involving drudgery, how time crawls. Like if you don't, for example, if you don't like your job, you get to work at 9 a.m. and the clock just seems to crawl. But if you're talking with your friends, just like yesterday I was speaking with Chaitanya Charan Das, and I had scheduled 45 minutes for him. Before I knew it, an hour and a half had passed. So when you're absorbed in something you like that's appealing, time just moves so quickly. But otherwise, no. It seems to crawl. The consciousness of time also changes according to your age. Maybe you can remember when you were young, 8 or 9 or 10 years old, on a hot summer day, time just seemed to drag so slowly. As a little kid at that time, the quote-unquote good TV shows, the ones kids like, would only come on later in the day. And so during summer vacation when there's no school, you wake up and you have to wait all day for the good TV shows. My brother would wait for cartoons in the evening cartoons. 6 o'clock. I would wait for baseball games. The time seemed to move so slowly. This is back in the 50s in New York City. There are only maybe, even in a big city like New York, there are just 5 television channels. And at 6 o'clock, all of them would play the same announcement, 6 p.m. evening. It is 6 p.m., do you know where your children are? You never hear such these days, right? So, time moves so slowly when you're little. It seemed like you never get out of school, right? One grade after another grade, such a long time before you would finish secondary school. Then you go to the uni, time starts to move faster. Then as you get older and older, you wonder, where did all the time go? I often quote my mother, she's 87. I asked her, what is your greatest realization in life now that you're 87? She said, my life went by so quickly. That was her greatest realization. In a previous purport, we see the statement that atom is the minute, subtle form of eternal time. How can something that's material actually be a form of time, eternal time? Everything material has a beginning and end. Therefore, time is part of it, the composition, so to speak. If you look at your body as time, then you can understand its transit from beginning to end. You can look at your body and you can look at the world as composed of time. And also, you can look at your body, you can look at the world as being devoured by time. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, it is stated, you should see the whole universe as being in the jaws of time. This is not just a poetic statement. This is actually how to see. How to observe your body as being made of time and in the jaws of time. In Muchakunda's presentation to Krishna, you see his acknowledgement of what time did to him. He said, one minute this body is called king. The next minute, this body, because of time, is called ashes or feces. Or dirt. The same thing has different names due to time. Krimivit Bhasma. See the food for the worms. Worms chew on something. Some worms chew and then turn what they eat into dirt. So either the worms or excrement or ashes because the bodies burn. Just by the movements of time. The reality changes. One minute it's a king sitting high on his elephant riding in procession. The next minute, Krimivit, Bhasma, worms, ashes, excrement. What's going on? So Muchakunda also describe how time devours. It's not only the fabric of material things, but it also devours material things. So the two angles simultaneously. He describes that he became so powerful that he had no equals. Those who were formerly his equals, those kings who were his peers, became subordinate due to Muchakunda's power. And he said, I forgot about time, but what? Who knows the second part? Time didn't forget about me. Very powerful statement. I may have forgotten, but time did not forget. Our whole so-called civilization is based on forgetting about time. But Muchakunda describes time as being alert. At the right moment, time, like a snake, gobbled me up. Like an alert snake, licking its fangs with its tongue, just waiting for the right moment to pounce on the mouse. How you perceive time depends on your material situation. Perception of time is relative, situational. That you can understand from very graphically from the ninth canto. couldn't be. He wanted to find the best husband for his daughter, Revati. Evidently, the dating services on Earth didn't work. Yes, now even in India, the online dating services, right? Becoming so popular. The facts of the internet usage are this. The number one source of revenue on the internet is not shopping. Horribly, it is pornography. It's the number one source of revenue on the internet. And number two, online dating services. So this, you just follow the numbers and you understand what human beings are truly interested in. So anyway, could me being a good father, he wanted the best daughter for, best husband for his daughter. So he went as far as he could go in the material universe. He went to Brahmaloka. He had that kind of ability to travel. When he got to Brahmaloka to ask Brahma, who's the best for my daughter? Fathers are often very attached to daughters. I remember when I was in university and my father got my sister, you know, she's about 6 years younger than me, he bought her a car. And so I said, Dad, what about me? I'm the oldest son, why don't you buy me a car? He looked at me and said, son, a daughter is a very special thing in a father's life. I said, hey, great, where's my car? He said it like this is the supreme absolute truth. Undeniable Vedic injunction. Yeah. Remember? Prabhupada's sister, she had reached 12 years old and she wasn't married, which at the beginning of the 20th century was considered a crisis, a family crisis. So Prabhupada describes how his mother was really on his father's case, threatening, like, this is becoming such a critical situation. She's 12 years old. She's not married. What are you doing about it? And the way Prabhupada describes it, the father was saying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying. Of course, now it's very different in India. I think the age of crisis is what, about 28 now? That's when I usually get messages, you know, from disciples, you know. That's the red zone. 28 and above and beyond. Less than 28, career time, right? 28, uh-oh. So we can appreciate Kukudmi's concerns. And he had that power to travel, even to Brahmaloka. Sometimes Brahmaloka is described as being beyond the modes of material nature. There's certainly no passionate ignorance there. So he approached Brahma, but Brahma didn't want to be approached right at that moment. He was absorbed in a music concert staged by the Gandharvas. You think you like material music, you've never heard anything that can compare to what Gandharvas can play and sing. So one devotee was somewhere with Srila Prabhupada, and there was some Indian classical music playing, some ragas or this or that. And Prabhupada turned to the devotee and said, "You like? It is very heavenly." There are different levels of music. If we actually heard high quality material music from higher realms, there's no way we could listen to the music of Earth. Oh, Brahma was being entertained by the Gandharvas. And he told Kakudmi, "I can't deal with your question right now. Just wait. Just wait a moment." And very shortly after that, the concert ended. And then Brahma turns to Kakudmi. "Yes, what is it you want?" "I would like that you select a husband for my daughter." And Brahma said, "That's very good, but do you understand what's happened? In the gap of time, that short gap of time between your approaching me and my telling you to wait, in just those few minutes, everything has changed on Earth. All the people you know are long gone. Their children are long gone. Their grandchildren are long gone. No one even remembers their names anymore." So what was a few moments on Brahmalok? On Earth was such a long time that three generations and more had come and gone. And as Brahma said, even the history of these persons is forgotten. This is the reality of time. So what to do? What could Kakudmi do? Brahma advised him, "Your daughter, Rebati, she should marry the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan Balaram. Go back down to Earth and find Balaram." So Kakudmi went back to Earth, and sure enough, where his residence was, where his family was, they were just ruins. Everyone had long disappeared. Three generations had long passed along with their reputations. So he found Balaram and presented his daughter in marriage to Balaram. A very powerful history that shows us how time works in the universe. We don't want to be victimized by time. In the third canon of Bhagavatam, Lord Kapiladeva explains another very illustrative example. You look in the sky and you see a mass of clouds. In Melbourne sometime, are there big puffy clouds in the sky? Yes. Then everything changes the next moment. Right? In New Zealand, they call it the land of the long white cloud. So sometimes these clouds just seem to hang in the sky so beautifully. But next moment, the wind changes and blows them out of the sky. So Lord Kapiladeva explained to his mother that just like a mass of clouds in the sky is unaware of the power of the wind, similarly, the living entity is unaware of the time factor. Remember, you forget about time, but time does not forget about you. One of the symptoms, the preliminary symptoms of ecstatic love of Krishna is the expertise to use every moment in Krishna's service. So what becomes fearful for the conditioned soul becomes a source of ecstasy for the advanced devotee. Time means something meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. The more expert you become at that, praying at every moment, "Krishna, what's the best thing I can do now for your pleasure?" The more expert you become at that, the more your ecstasy increases. In other words, we're talking about ecstasy in terms of engaging things in Krishna's service. This is the kind of expertise that we long for, because we consider ourselves servants. For example, the Prachetas, they make that famous prayer in the fourth canto that we don't mind staying in the material world. Indeed, we don't expect to go back to Godhead. We simply pray that we'll always have the association of devotees. This is the benediction we want. That we'll always be in the association of devotees, no matter what kind of birth we take, no matter what planet we're on. May we always be in the association of those who are hearing and chanting about Krishna. We don't expect to go back to Godhead. We're too contaminated. So Srila Prabhupada writes that this is the best benediction to ask from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Never mind my next birth, what kind of body, what kind of planet. Just let me be in association of those who are glorifying you. We don't think we're fit to go back to Godhead. We simply want to be amongst devotees who are glorifying Krishna. So then Prabhupada makes the point. Actually, that's back to Godhead. This is the height of bhakti mysticism. Your location, where you are, actually depends on what's going on in your association. If in your association, your sangha, you are glorifying Krishna, your location is different from those who aren't. That takes some time to see. Some progress in spiritual life. All right. Are there any questions? Yes? What?
Complicated concept.
Complicated for who? It's maybe complicated for you, but it's not complicated for Sukadeva Goswami. So gradually by reading Bhagavatam, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, serving Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll get some insight into why Sukadeva Goswami says what he says. Bhagavatam has everything in it, for the most neophyte to the most advanced devotee. Gradually, as the years of devotional service go by, you'll be able to see Sukadeva Goswami's ecstasy in what he's presenting. Sometimes due to ecstasy, he jumbles up events. Chronology that he gives for things that happen in Leelas get out of place. The primary concern of Bhagavatam is ecstasy. It's a different kind of civilization, you know? Prema Bhakti is what Bhagavatam is all about. That's its goal. Chronology is not so important. By humbly approaching Srimad Bhagavatam, gradually you'll get insight. Don't expect Bhagavatam to immediately conform to your material sense perception. You may wonder, why is this being described? Why is that being described? Why shouldn't there just be the 10th canto? Just the Leelas. I've heard devotees saying, Bhagavad Gita really begins in the second chapter. The first chapter is all unnecessary. What do we know? How do we say such a thing? Humility means to accept that our senses are limited. Our understanding is tiny. But if we follow Krishna's instructions, his process, we'll be able to know Krishna and his energies as much as a limited entity can know. Westerners for Indians too? Just in India, you know, they have what I call the broad coverage insurance policy. You give a little something to all the gods, something may work, you know. Broad coverage insurance, you know. 10 rupees to this god, 100 rupees to that god. Who knows? Something may work. When you were taking exams in India, your parents didn't go to a temple and offer some Lakshmi and prayers. Did they? Huh? He doesn't want to admit, so. Whether you're east, west, north, or south, you cannot understand the spirit soul by material methods. That's why out and out materialists just say, reject it all. Any non-material notion of the self. In fact, now many cutting-edge materialist reductionists are saying the self is a complete illusion. There's no such thing as a self. It's the brain is conjuring up an illusion that there's a self. Unless you accept non-material methods, non-material source of knowledge, you cannot understand even your non-material identity. What to speak of understanding Krishna, the supreme spiritual identity. So this is the problem throughout the world. So you're wondering what to do about. Yes, they need repeated association. They need an arrangement in which they can get constant association. I always point out, in this present stage of the age of Kali, the way things are, particularly for persons born outside India, born in the West, once a week Sangha is not enough. There's so many distractions, entertainment, stimulations. Once a week, won't do it. Back in the 60s and 70s when ISKCON started in the West, come to the Sunday feast, that could do it for you. But these days, there's so much. There's so many mass weapons of distraction that candidates need repeated association. Otherwise, as you say, one moment they chant, next moment they stop chanting, they're reading, oh yes, this sounds good, turn a few pages, I don't understand that. Close the book. But if they have good association, that will inspire them to make it over these impediments. Association and a situation in which we can associate is so important.
Science, we know that the gold is softer than the copper, then hard. in terms of like when it's a
potential. Okay. You're probably not getting the whole scientific process in that one verse. It's not explaining everything. There can be so many factors. You're assuming that Shukadeva Goswami is explaining the whole methodology. It can be just a summary. This is also something you'll confront in the fifth canto. As for what is allegory in the Bhagavatam, I can repeat what Srila Prabhupada said. He said, most of Bhagavatam is factual. A small portion is allegory. But what is allegory? You can only know if you're a liberated soul. So you may say, oh, but that's just a put off.
Yeah.
What does it matter whether you're liberated or not? A fact is a fact is a fact, right? Now, as I often point out, you may have read in this book I wrote, Searching for Vedic India, Vedic knowledge presents that knowledge is state-specific. According to your particular state of consciousness, that determines what you can understand. Standard Western knowledge doesn't accept that. Standard Western knowledge, that means other than quantum mechanics, is built on the so-called understanding that doesn't matter your purity of consciousness. What is the purity of consciousness anyway? In fact, for Western science, what is consciousness? They don't understand consciousness. We'll speak of purity of consciousness. We'll speak of how knowledge is state-specific. According to your state of consciousness, that determines what you can understand. If you pay attention to Krishna's explanation of the three modes of material nature in Bhagavad Gita, you see that when your consciousness is influenced in certain ways, what you see and do, and even what you believe, the concepts that you have, change. If we see Bhagavatam in that way, our knowledge varies according to our level of consciousness. Then we can start to understand many of these things that appear to be so mysterious. A liberated soul will see differently in Bhagavatam than a beginning devotee. That humility is required. What's in the very beginning of Bhagavatam, what's the qualification given? Paramo Namatsaranam Satam. Bhagavatam is the Paramahansa Samhita. It's the song meant for liberated persons. And a primary symptom of a liberated person is completely free of envy. To be completely free of envy means you're not envious of Krishna. Envy of other living entities begins with envy of Krishna. Become envious of Krishna, then you become envious of Krishna's parts and parcels. So right in the beginning of Bhagavatam, you see the entry requirements. Just like you want to go to university, they have entry requirements. Not everyone who wants to go to Melbourne Uni can go there, right? You may have to go to another university because you don't make the entry requirements. Or in India, IIT, the supreme destination. Does everyone get to go there? No, they have to take that famous test, right? The multiple choices test. Is it still multiple choices or have they changed it? One says it's still multiple, other says changing.
The preliminary is multiple choice, but the main exam is written.
Is written. All right. So, You cannot just walk into IIT. I'm a nice person. I want to understand everything here. You have to pass the entrance exam. You have to become qualified. Well, at least the theoretical idea of the exam is to see who's qualified. Other educators will point out that that kind of exam is looking for a certain narrow kind of intellect. So now, in educational circles in India, the talk is starting to happen. We have produced so many engineers, so many IT specialists, meanwhile we're destroying our environment. But in Delhi, half the children are predicted to have their lifespan reduced because of the air pollution. That means, while focusing on one narrow type of knowledge, other essential and more fundamental knowledges have been overlooked, and therefore human beings are destroying their own lives in the name of advancement. According to the latest statistics from world agencies, the air in Delhi is 4 times as polluted as Beijing. I always thought Beijing was the ultimate in air pollution. On some days, you can't even see a building that's nearby up ahead because the pollution is so thick. But no, Delhi, 4 times as much as Beijing. I remember last year in Delhi, I was coughing, my eyes were watering, and then all the devotees told me, "Oh no, don't worry. Beijing is much worse." This is not so bad. Now the statistics have come out. 4 times as worse as Beijing. Are the IIT exams helping with that? Or did they actually cause the problem? So Vedic knowledge is something different. It requires elevated consciousness. In time, if you stick with it, you'll understand. You want to wrestle with some of these points, I recommend you read a book I wrote, Searching for Vedic India. It deals with mundane approaches to Vedic knowledge, mundane misinterpretations. All right? Anything else? Yes? If you're measuring time by the space you cover, well, the greatest time covers the greatest space. Smallest time covers a small space. Simple. If you fly from Melbourne to Perth, that's one time. If you fly from Melbourne to Kuala Lumpur, that's another time.
So does the non-dual manifestation include just the...
Non-dual manifestation means before the material energy differentiates. You're dealing with something called pradhan, dealing with mahatattva. Yes?
Dear Swami, according to Sukadeva Goswami, atom is the smallest. But what is our answer when materialists say that there are neutron, proton, electron also in the atom?
This is a different way of looking at things. You can't look at it quid pro quo. Sukadeva Goswami says this, material scientists say that. They're talking exactly about the same thing. They're looking at things differently. In any case, do we see the snake of time with its jaws open, tongue licking the fangs? No one's asking questions about that. Ha ha ha!
hanging like a sword of Damocles. A sword hanging.
Vaishnavis, any questions? Last question, yes.
Maharaj, in case of King Kukmi, he could travel to Saptiloka, but is it like, had he forgotten the relativity of time, or was that...
Has what?
Had he forgotten about the relativity of time, or was that the arrangement of Lord to marry his daughter?
Evidently, Brahma had to inform him what was going on. Whether he forgot or he didn't know, in any case, Brahma informed him. You're asking me for a husband for your daughter, but let me tell you what's happened in just a few moments while you were waiting to talk to me. So Brahma educated him. So let us not have Muchakunda's lamentation. I forgot about time, but time did not forget about me. At the right moment, like a hungry snake, it pounced on me. Remember, he described time as being very alert, unfailing in its execution. Therefore, you can appreciate time as Krishna because it is so unfailing in what it does. That's why Krishna says, Kalosmi, time I am. I've come to destroy the worlds. You can't stop it. The only way to deal with time is through glorifying Krishna. Both the rising and setting of the sun diminish everyone's lifespan except for the one who's glorifying Krishna. So you want to be immune to time? You chant and dance in the kirtan. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.
Because on one hand, we're